front of the room, the recesses, the endless rituals and procedures, Dennis felt a profound boredom. When he wasn't listening to people tell stories about him that weren't true, or cringing while his life was put on display and picked apart, he could only think of how desperately he wanted to get out of there. "I wasn't thinking right," he says now. "I even used to think jail was better than the court because at least there I could read, I could talk to the guys, or even do chores. Anything had to be better than court." Interview, Altoona Prison, 1996. Dennis's attorney, Charles Clarkson, assured him it would be over soon. Dennis wondered what would happen to him when it was over. On day one, he had looked over his shoulder to the faces of those in the gallery, his parents not among them. It had been months since he'd spoken to his mother or father, who had all but disowned him as they believed him to be guilty. When this was over, where would he go? The defense called upon forensic experts, each of whom concluded they could not with any confidence place Dennis at the scene of the crime. As the trial came to its end, Clarkson assured Dennis that this was a done deal. He would be out in a matter of weeks. But public perception of Dennis didn't change, even in the face of such strong evidence of his innocence. Perhaps this should have been a warning for the defense, that in this case an argument of reason and fact would not be enough. They were competing with pure emotion, and there was no reasoning with feelings. Red River Tribune, June 12, 1993. It has been revealed that just last year, Danson's attorney was responsible for the release of known sex offender Lyle Monday. Mere weeks after his release, Monday went on to rape and kill an 11-year-old girl. The attorney, Charles Clarkson, stated he was not regretful about his part in this tragedy, saying at the time, "It's a tragedy that Lyle went on to take a life. I think of it every day. But he was found not guilty by a jury for a crime he didn't commit. We can't imprison people for crimes they have not committed. We can't speculate that someone may commit a crime in the future and lock them up. This isn't how the law works." In the eyes of the public, Charles Clarkson was a defender of child killers. The people of Red River feared what might happen if the jury were to find Dennis not guilty. Would their own children be in danger? The defense stayed their course. They asked the jury, "Could you find Dennis Danson guilty beyond any reasonable doubt?" Not whether they liked Dennis, not whether they found him untrustworthy or cold or suspicious. Simply looking at the evidence presented to them, could they say with absolute certainty that he killed Holly Michaels? "I couldn't," Charles Clarkson said. "I urge you to think this through carefully without any personal bias. The evidence is not there. Dennis could not have killed Holly Michaels." Court transcripts, closing statement, July 1993. The jury deliberated for just 6 hours. "Guilty," the foreman said. Some started clapping in the gallery. Dennis felt blindsided by the verdict. Framing the Truth, Florida, Carrie Atwood, Patrick Garrity, 1993, VHS. And returned to jail, unable to fully comprehend the outcome. Then the next day, he was taken to the warden's office. His mother had been found in the garage, her skin duck egg blue. The car had been running all night. By the time they found her, there was nothing they could do. The warden said he was sorry, his voice low, eyes softened in solemnity, and Dennis was taken back to his cell. The funeral took place without him, his father not willing to sign the papers that would allow him to attend under police supervision. There was no privacy to mourn. Instead, Dennis felt himself go numb. Even at his sentencing, he stood only half present, not even sure he cared what would happen anymore. He'd learned to tune out the monotonous voices in the court. They became like white noise to him. So when a group started to cheer in the back of the room, he snapped to life and looked at his lawyer, his eyes wide with hope. But his lawyer took his shoulder and squeezed, shook his head, "No." The judge called for order, but a man shouted, "Tell us where they are. Only God can judge you now." Framing the Truth, Atwood, Garrity.
9. The money Sam's grandmother had left her was running low. She had underestimated how expensive it would be, and now she needed to be careful or she wouldn't be able to afford the flight home. She said it out loud, home, and felt nothing. The house in Bristol was empty, and she thought of renting it out. But even that would require a trip back, and she wasn't sure that it was something she could handle. There was no reason for her to go back except the money. And what would she do when she got back there? She'd left her job, her home, her family. Everything that mattered to her was here now. She checked the mirror. The dress for the bachelorette party Carrie was throwing her looked good, but her face was still puffy from crying on the phone to her mother that afternoon.
"What are you doing?" her mother had asked, strains of hysteria in her voice. "What are you thinking?"
Sam kept trying to tell her about the miscarriage of justice. The gentle man Dennis was, the group of friends she was with who were so happy for her.
"It's a fantasy. You can't possibly know anything about this man," her mother said.
"His name is Dennis," Sam said.
"It doesn't matter whether he's innocent or not."
"Of course it matters.
He's in prison. They will execute him."
It hurt the way her mother said it.
"No, they won't. Mum, you have to understand how big this is. This petition has hundreds of thousands of signatures."
"Oh, what good will a petition do? Samantha, be realistic. I know you aren't as stupid as this." "Even if he's never released, even if I will still love him, I still want to be his wife."
"Why? I don't understand. Why?"
"I love him."
"What are we supposed to tell people?"
"Tell them the truth. Everyone else in the world understands what's going on here."
"I'm just ashamed. I feel so deeply ashamed. If your grandmother were alive to see this..."
Sam hung up, lay in bed, and wept until her phone finally buzzed with a message from Carrie, reminding her she'd be there at 6. Sam got up and ran the shower too hot, forcing herself to stay under, the spray hitting her back until it hurt enough to forget. Once ready, she sat on the edge of her bed and tried not to sweat her makeup off before she'd actually gone outside.
"You look hot," Carrie told her when she arrived.
They went to a nearby chain restaurant where balloons tied to bar stools quivered in the air. Road signs, guitars, and antlers decorated the walls. The crew clapped as they arrived, and each came over to shake her hand or hug her, say their congratulations. Sam took a seat in their booth, sliding next to Patrick, squeezed in further by Carrie. Her cocktail arrived with a sparkler, and as it burned down, the crew hushed into an organized quiet. Carrie presented her with a ring box.
"This is from all of us. It's not big or anything, but you know."
The engagement ring was white gold, a small diamond, delicate and simple. Sam couldn't look at anyone for fear of crying again, but Carrie hugged her.
"Dennis is like my little brother, and you make him so happy. It's the least we can do. Really."
"I can't." "Oh, shut up. You totally fucking can," Carrie said, and that was it.
Sam slipped the engagement ring onto her ring finger and posed for a photo at Carrie's insistence. Then more photos with Carrie at Carrie's insistence, who posted them on the series' official Twitter page. As she sat down, Carrie put a veil and a plastic tiara on her head. The grips tugged her hair and dug into her skull. The warmth of the alcohol and the sugary fruit punch was giving her a buzz, and she felt present, alive. They'd had an argument a few days ago, Carrie and Sam, a small one. Sam was talking about Lindsay. Perhaps she had been talking too much, but Carrie had groaned, loud, interrupting her.
"Oh my God, girl, you need to stop, seriously, it must be so stressful inside your head."
"Actually, yeah, it is," Sam said. "If you wanted me to stop, you could have just said. You didn't need to be so about it."
"I've tried to change the subject about 1,000 times. It keeps coming back to Lindsay. Like, who cares? Dennis doesn't even care. He forgot she even visited until you brought it up.
He has no one most of the year. You want to stop her visiting just because it makes you feel shitty?
Dennis won't say it, but I will. It's pretty fucking selfish, Sam. I'm borderline crazy."
"Dennis loves you. I love you. So please, for the love of God, let it go." I get it, but no, uh-uh, just let it go. It's not that easy.
It really is. Fine.
Thank you.
It left her embarrassed, tingling from shock, unsure whether Carrie and Dennis shared secret conversations about her. What else had they said? They ordered food, platters of nachos and wings to share, huge racks of ribs and burgers. By this time tomorrow, I will be Mrs. Dennis Danson, Sam said, draining her cocktail. The crew cheered. She had the wedding dress, brightly colored, modest, a flattering wrap around her waist, and the three-quarter-length sleeves the prison dress code demanded. And the legal team helped with the paperwork. It wasn't the wedding she might have dreamed of, she admitted, but then she'd never cared much for weddings. The group around her were easy with their joy, which helped quell the rise of doubt that swelled in her every now and then. Dread like rising floodwater, cold and insidious. The music was loud, and everyone in the restaurant was shouting to be heard over the music. A child threw a tantrum, and a group of waiters gathered to sing a birthday song to an embarrassed-looking teenage girl, her mouth twisted in a half-smile. Patrick was telling everyone about a documentary he'd filmed in Iraq when Jackson Anderson appeared and stood at the end of the table. Surprised, everybody stopped to greet him. He leaned in and gave Sam an awkward hug. "I heard about your engagement. Congratulations." She thanked him and scooted over to offer him a seat, but he stayed standing, his hands in his pockets. "I just thought I'd drop by and introduce myself before we film tomorrow." "Tomorrow?" Sam slid her tiara off her head and put it on the seat. "We're filming the wedding? We spoke to Dennis about it, and we agreed it was best for the story we're telling to show the other side of Dennis, because without your relationship, he just comes across as kind of one-dimensional, you know?" All of a sudden, Sam felt sick, her stomach swirling with booze and fried food and fear. Instantly, the dress she planned to wear seemed dowdy, her skin cratered and blotchy, waist thick and lumpy. Behind him, two smiling waiters held a chocolate cake lit up with sparklers and a candle in the shape of a bride and groom. Sam blew out the candle as Jackson swung a chair around, adjusting the cap on his head. Sam had seen Jackson before when he was interviewed on BBC News in a beige room with drawn curtains. His adaptations of a young adult dystopian trilogy had grossed hundreds of millions. Yet, it was obvious he wanted to be taken more seriously. The way he carried himself, answering questions about the films with pretentious statements. She hadn't liked him then, and she didn't like him now as he straddled the chair, his cap low even indoors. "He thinks he's Ron fucking Howard," Carrie had said once. "So, anyway, we'll be filming, since you need witnesses anyway, and then we'll leave you be for the rest of the visit. I think you get an hour. That's pretty good, yeah?" "I don't know. Isn't it, kind of personal?" Sam looked to the others for support, but they were all gazing elsewhere, twirling cocktail umbrellas and twanging tiny plastic swords, sticky from maraschino cherries. "You are okay with that, right?" Jackson asked.
"Yeah, I'm just surprised," Sam said. "I thought I'd have to sign something."
"No need. It's all sorted out. So I'll see you all tomorrow, bright and early. Carrie, loving the cuts you sent. Keep it up."
He swung the chair back to the empty table next door and left. The group let out a synchronized breath.
"It's like all our dads just showed up trying to be cool in front of our friends," Carrie said, and the group laughed in relief.
But as they cut the cake, Sam's buzz was subsiding to tiredness, and she wondered how to excuse herself, wanting to be alone. The next morning, Sam lay waiting for her alarm to go off. Her dress hung on the back of the door, the tags dangling at its side. She'd stayed out too late and drunk more than she'd meant to. Throughout the night, she'd run to the bathroom and emptied her stomach until it was just the water she forced down her throat that came back up, fibrous and warm. The grease from the food still seemed to be clinging to her skin. She brushed her teeth too hard and spat blood, scraped her hair into a ponytail, and wound it into a tight bun, stabbing hairpins deep and hurting her scalp. Her skin was grey, and her eyes looked watery and tired. The dress that had felt so good the week before seemed frumpy and clingy. But she ripped the tag off, threw it in the bin, and decided she would only look at herself today if absolutely necessary. On her way out, she bought a bottle of Dr. Pepper from the machine, so bubbly it burned her tongue, and waited for Carrie in the shade of an awning in the parking lot. When they arrived in the visiting room, they were greeted by the crew, headed by Jackson, along with a court official who was there to perform the ceremony.
"Here comes the bride," Carrie said.
Nervous, Patrick looked as pale as she did.
"Excited?"
Jackson said, peering through a camera.
"I'm okay, I'm fine."
"Where's Dennis? Is he..."
5 minutes, said one guard. "My daughter loves your movie. She's going to be so jealous when she hears about this."
"Well, leave your details with Carrie there and we'll get something sent out to your daughter," Jackson told him. Carrie nodded and waved, turned to Sam and mouthed, "Dick," flicking her eyes in Jackson's direction. Sam felt a familiar sensation, like something pulling away from her body, as if she wanted to run. Instead, she breathed deep, fixed herself to the ground. "Cold feet," she told herself. "Everyone gets cold feet." They heard Dennis before they saw him. The chains. The squeak of a heavy metal door, like some kind of B-movie monster. He was in his whites, and he'd had his head close shaved, which made her want to reach and touch the short hair that glittered under the light. But they would be separated, as always, by the plastic. No exceptions, not even on their wedding day. As they both sat down at the divide, Sam looked at his arms. New contours that hadn't been there before. The way his stomach seemed to stay flat even as he leaned in.
"Have you lost weight?"
she asked, pulling her dress down over the roll on her own stomach.
"Yes,"
he said, pleased she'd noticed. "I've been working out since you got here."
"I didn't realize how bad it had gotten."
"You look great."
"You do."
"Thanks." He glanced down and twisted his arm to look at the muscle.
"You look different, too.
Are you tired?"
Yeah. We had a bachelorette thing last night. I kind of drank a bit."
Sam looked away from him, face on fire.
"Okay,"
Jackson clapped his hands and rubbed them. "We ready?"
"Hey," Dennis said.
"Sorry. You look beautiful."
She raised her head and saw him pressing his finger to the plastic. She smiled and did the same. As neither were religious, they had decided on a civil ceremony. A justice of the peace, a man in a beige suit with a blue tie, read from a plastic ring binder, the spine of which creaked as he turned pages and shifted on his feet. The room felt unbearably stuffy, and sweat collected in Sam's cleavage. As the official spoke, she and Dennis looked at one another. She said her vows, listened while he said his, looked into his face, and wondered what he was thinking, whether he felt as weird as she did, repeating those words that didn't suit her lips, that hung wooden in the air. She wished they'd written their own vows, so she could tell him she would be there whether he was ever released or not, that she would fight for him until all was lost, that she loved him so much it hurt her bones. They could not kiss. Prison rules dictated they must stay on opposite sides of the divide, no exceptions. The crew hugged Sam and gave Dennis their congratulations before excusing themselves. What might have been, Sam wondered. Their first dance and feeding each other cake? A wedding night tangled in white sheets? Instead, they talked, and he asked her to promise she wouldn't leave.
"I thought I could handle it," he said, "but I can't. I need you to stay."
"I haven't got enough money. I'll need to go back to England, work for a while, save up."
"Please," he said. "I spoke to Jackson about this, and he said he could get you some work here. Just stay a couple of months. I live for these visits."
"What about my visa? I don't think I can work."
"We're married now. You can become a citizen.
Stop looking for reasons you can't stay.
You're my wife now. I need you."
10. A few weeks later, and Sam was living in a cheap apartment on the outskirts of Gainesville, paid for by Jackson Anderson. He occasionally threw her menial tasks to make her feel as though she wasn't freeloading. Things like reading and replying to emails from fans of Framing the Truth, or looking through the social media comments and sharing anything related to the upcoming series with their followers. But this only took up a small part of her day, the rest of which she spent watching TV or wandering the aisles of Walmart, unable to decide what to eat later, forgetting what she'd come there for in the first place and buying the junk that made her teeth feel furry and her stomach ache. Carrie moved back to LA after they'd finished filming. She called regularly and stayed on the phone for an hour at a time. The silence was like a vice after they hung up. Sam became obsessed with watching people from back home on Facebook, who seemed to be posting exclusively to her, showing off new babies and new jobs, mud runs and restaurants. She hadn't looked at Mark's page since he left her, and now she looked at it just to hurt herself, scrawling through it for any suggestion of her. But it was as if she'd never existed. The message boards weren't kind about her marriage to Dennis. They called her a groupie, and were more concerned with the progress or lack of progress in the case. They wanted a different judge, one who wasn't biased, and organized a petition for someone new to work on the appeal. Sam wondered how she'd ever admired these people. Didn't they think that Dennis's lawyers would already have done this? Once a week she visited Dennis, brushing her hair and smiling with less and less to talk about. Then, the cycle broke, her phone ringing in the middle of the afternoon.
"I've got news," Carrie said. "Are you sitting down?"
Carrie explained the tips line had received a call from a man who wanted to remain anonymous. He told them he'd been in prison for child sex offences for 10 years and saw the billboards months after being released. When he was first arrested, he said he shared a cell with a man called Wayne, who had told him how there were girls he'd killed that the cops never knew about. He had said they'd even found one of them, and he thought for sure he was going down for it, but the police never came. The shock made him stop killing for years after that. At first, the caller said, he thought Wayne was lying about it, because who's dumb enough to admit being a fucking serial killer to some guy he just met? But it stuck with him, because of the eerie level of detail and the pride Wayne took in the story. "What color hair does Wayne have?" the agent on the tips line asked. The caller told them it was salt and pepper, but in patches it was a thick, wiry black. Wayne had also boasted about how he hacked off a lock of the girl's hair as a keepsake, but burned it on the side of a road weeks later for fear of the cops finding it. The girl had scratched him up pretty good. He'd had to cut the fingers off, and it made Wayne sick to his stomach at the time, the caller said, though he had laughed when he recounted it, and made the sound of splintering bones with his teeth. Wayne told the caller he never felt satisfied, and every time he got a girl, it always escalated. It's how he got caught eventually. He'd hung around at the crime scene too long and it all got messy. The caller didn't like the guy, was glad to be moved away from him. He wasn't a snitch, he said, but it was hard for a sex offender like him to get employment and the reward money looked good. The detail about Holly Michaels's hair had never been released to the public, how a knife had left a nick in the back of her skull, where he caught her while cutting off a lock. It sent Dennis's team into overdrive, and they started putting together new applications for the testing of evidence and calling authorities. Eventually, they tracked down a Wayne Nestor, who had been transferred from the prison the caller mentioned to another in Kansas. He'd been arrested for the violent murder and rape of several young girls. So his MO was in line with Holly's murder, as was the fact that at the time he'd been residing in Ocala, driving a truck that took a route right by Oklawaha, the cheerleader camp where the sighting of the flasher had originally been reported. Carrie waited long enough to make sure it was worth getting excited about, and made everyone promise she could be the first to call Sam. "So, what do you think?" she said now. "What happens next?" Sam was chewing her thumb. In the mirror she saw herself, pale and dark-eyed, a cluster of spots on her chin. "We get Holly's shirt retested. If Wayne's DNA is on there, it'll flag up on the CODIS, the criminal database, and, well, Dennis could be released within days of that happening. I mean, it's fucking him, right?" Sam stopped pacing, held the back of a chair and tried to focus. The room around her was littered with discarded clothes, dirty glasses and plates, empty food cartons. "Days," she said. "Yeah, bitch, days. Exonerated."
There was never a shred of Den's DNA on Holly. So if we can put a name to the blood on her shirt, they'll have no choice but to release him. And this collar has given us strong grounds to get that shirt retested. How likely is it they'll let us test the shirt? Sam no longer knew what she wanted. Was it this? I'd say it's pretty likely. They've turned us down before, but with an actual probable suspect to test it against. The lawyers are fairly confident right now. Patrick and I are coming back with the crew to Florida on Wednesday, so we don't miss anything. I'm so psyched right now. How are you feeling? If the appeal fell through and the authorities refused to retest the shirt, there'd be nothing left to hope for. Has anyone told Dennis yet? No. There's been so much fact verification to do in case this guy was just some loser or fantasist. No one wanted to get his hopes up. I don't really know what to do, Sam sat, her legs weak beneath her. Whatever was next, she had to be ready for it. 11. Sam got the news just 3 days later. Wayne Nestor had admitted to the prison pastor that he'd killed Holly Michaels. Seeking redemption, he confessed to everything, repeating it all to a video camera with his lawyer at his side, and asking for nothing but God's forgiveness. The courts retested the t-shirt and got a positive match. Finally, Dennis was to be released. After so many disappointments and false starts, life was suddenly on fast forward. The night before Dennis's release, Sam had a drink to calm her nerves, then several more, until her phone was waking her up and Carrie was saying she'd be with her in 20 minutes. Sam asked if it could be more like an hour, and Carrie laughed, as if the idea Sam could wait even another second was unbelievable. She washed in the sink, sprayed herself all over with deodorant until the small windowless bathroom was cloudy with it. She applied fresh makeup over yesterday's makeup, pulled a dress from the laundry basket, wrinkled and musty, and shouted when Carrie arrived in just 15 minutes. She threw things at random into an overnight bag, not knowing where she would be staying, not believing Dennis would be with her. Carrie beeped the horn again and she screamed, "Fuck! Fuck! Calm the fuck down! I'm coming!" There was a coffee waiting for her in the cup holder in the car, giant, just cool enough to sip. Carrie was talking about her girlfriend Dylan, who complained about the demands the case was putting on her. "I don't think she really believes he's getting out, you know, it's tough. I've been doing this for 21 years now, but we've only been together for 3. Dylan doesn't get it sometimes. It's so good to have you. You get it." Sam kept agreeing as she watched the car dealerships and discount stores zip by. They seemed to be hurtling towards the court. Carrie's voice was manic and hard to follow. The radio noise was getting louder, her chest was tight, and her ribs clutched at her lungs like fists. "Stop. We need to stop. I can't breathe," she said. "Now?" Carrie looked around, and Sam realized she couldn't change lanes to get to the lay-by. She rolled down the window, but the air was more suffocating than the inside. She undid her seatbelt, letting it snap back, the sensor pinging and screeching, urging her to buckle back up. But she was pulling her dress away from her chest, nails dragging over skin cold and clammy. "Stop! Stop the car!" Someone leaned on their horn as Carrie pulled over sharply. Sam opened the door before they'd stopped, tumbling out onto the rough ground beside the highway. "What's wrong? What's happening?" Carrie ran around the front of the car and squatted. She held Sam's hair off the back of her neck and told her to slow down and breathe deeply. "I don't know if I can do this," Sam admitted after she'd calmed slightly. "With Dennis?" Carrie stared at her, eyes wide with anxiety. Sam felt awful knowing what pressure she was putting on Carrie, but she couldn't help it. "It's happened so fast." "It has, I know. Look, you don't have to do this. I can take you home, or you can come and wait somewhere else. Take it one step at a time. You can come to the party later, or just say what you need and we'll do it." Carrie's voice was sincere, and she rested a palm on Sam's back as her breathing slowed. "No, I have to be there. I'm his wife." "Bullshit. He'll understand. It's a lot for him too, you know. I'll explain it to him." "No. It's not that I don't want to. It's just, I'm scared."
The truth was that Sam had grown used to their relationship as it was, separated by a thick plexiglass wall. Without that wall, Sam worried there was nothing to stop them from hurting each other, as she and Mark had done. Or all the other things people did to each other, walking away, lying, switching off their phones, little cruelties she and Dennis had so far been shielded from.
Of course you are. So am I. This is fucking crazy.
You're scared?
Yeah,
Carrie laughed nervously.
I've known him over 20 years and I've worked all that time for this moment. It was my whole life and now suddenly...
Holy shit. I should already be there, you know that? I was supposed to be filming this, but I just couldn't handle it. I decided I wanted to go with you because I figure you feel about as crazy as I do right now.
I know. It's difficult to process. I'm feeling it too. It's normal to feel like this.
She looked anxiously at her watch. Look, it's up to you. We can do whatever you want to do.
I'll come, Sam said. Her breathing was even.
The fear was still a knot inside her, but she imagined other things. The good things. How Dennis would lean towards her and kiss her. The heat of his mouth, pressing against him so tightly she'd feel the beat of his heart on her own. Just to touch him. Finally. Wasn't this what she had always wanted?
You sure?
Yes. Carrie held out her hands to help Sam stand. Together they got back into the car and carried on towards the court.
Are you sure you're okay? Carrie asked.
Yes. I'll be fine.
I know. Carrie smiled at her. You've got to be strong. Hook that 18-wheeler up to your balls and pull.
There were crowds around the courthouse, separated by striped barriers. On one side, 100 or so people with Dennis Danson t-shirts, signs that read Justice at Last, and Exonerated, and End the Death Penalty. On the other, a small group of vocal protesters, Still Guilty, and Where Are They, Dennis, and Let Us Grieve. Closer to the doors stood reporters, some speaking live to cameras, some waiting around looking bored and restless, paparazzi poised and boisterous. Sam shielded her face as they walked through the press, strangers calling her name. When they entered the courtroom, it was fairly full, and the rest of the crew were at the front right filming, with Jackson Anderson seated behind Dennis's lawyer. Carrie suggested asking people to move so they could sit closer, but Sam wanted to stay further back.
You go, she said.
But Carrie took a seat next to her and held her hand in both of hers.
Who are all these people? Sam asked. Who the fuck knows? Fans, I guess.
To Sam, it felt like an invasion. The atmosphere was rowdy and conflicted with her long-held fantasy of this event, in which there'd only be the crew and herself. A somber atmosphere and a softly spoken judge. Dennis would be freed from his cuffs, and he would turn to her and approach her tentatively. He would hesitate before kissing her. He would be shy, of course, and the kiss would be gentle. His hand on her cheek, fingers in her hair. Dennis would be reluctant to take his attention away from Sam, but he would, eventually, to thank everyone, to shake hands and hug and answer questions. Then he would excuse them, take her by the hand to their car, and they would be alone, unable to keep their hands off each other, driven to whatever hotel the team had booked for them. They had spent days locked away together, entwined and slick with sweat. They'd start making love when they were still half asleep, grinding lazily against one another, the covers tangled around their ankles. A cheer snapped her out of her daydream. The crowd shifted and saw Dennis, his back to her, in an oversized beige short-sleeved shirt, a brown tie slipping out of the collar. He spoke to his lawyer next to him, who was grinning and kept shaking him by the shoulder. Sam almost called out to him, wanting him to turn around and see her, but he stayed facing straight ahead. Near the front, she saw the back of a woman's head, hair long and straight. Is that Lindsay? She asked herself. Rush of cold up her neck. She almost asked Carrie but stopped herself, thinking of the fight and the feeling of sickness it left her with for days. The court was called to order. The judge entered and everyone stood, the murmuring fading to a few whispers and the squeak of shoes on the polished floor. There were formalities, the words brushing past Sam, her eyes on her husband's back, watching his shoulder blades move under his shirt. Carrie squeezed her hand and she started to listen, trying to focus over the sound of blood in her temples.
As someone who has worked in the justice system for over 40 years, I've seen the best of our system and, unfortunately, the worst. It is not infallible, and this does not excuse the huge miscarriages of justice, the likes of which we see here today. For a man to lose 21 years of his life, a young man, is a loss for which there is no compensation. That more children lost their lives due to the failings in this case is another tragedy. As a country, we should mourn the incalculable loss that has stemmed from this evil. It is not my place to tell you how to live your life now, Dennis, but I hope that you can find peace through everything and live well, be happy, do good, and spread kindness where you have been denied it yourself. So it is, with both sadness for your loss and joy for your redemption, that I hereby exonerate you of all charges. There was a roar of applause, and people swarmed forward. The woman in front was swallowed by the crowd, and Sam saw her duck as someone pushed past her. Dennis and his lawyer stood, and Sam saw Dennis bow his head a little towards the judge. With everyone standing, Sam lost sight of Dennis for a moment, but Carrie pulled her along by the arm, wading through people to get her to him. When they saw him again, he was having his cuffs unlocked by an officer, who shook his hand vigorously before he turned around and was embraced by his attorney. Everyone wanted to shake his hand. Dennis grinned as he was pushed forward by the men around him, but when he approached the swing door, he looked back over his shoulder as if someone were about to stop him. It was hard for Sam to tell if he had seen her, the way his glasses reflected the light and shielded his eyes, but when he turned towards Sam, his smile seemed to waver. She and Carrie continued towards him. Heads turned, and she heard someone murmur, "Wife." He held his hands out to her, palms up, and she touched them. Their fingers laced together, and he pulled her a little closer. She tilted her head to kiss him, and he flinched. "Sorry," he said, and quickly pushed his lips against hers. She realized she had her eyes open and squeezed them shut. Their teeth clacked together, and his breath was stale. When she pushed her tongue into his mouth, he jumped, startled. Sam disconnected, and they both looked away, wiping their lips. As they left, he held her hand, his knuckles digging into hers. They were hit by a wall of noise beyond the heavy doors, reporters shouting questions all at once. Dennis's lawyer read a prepared statement. "Justice. Innocence," she heard. "Freedom. Support. Fight." Police escorted them to a silver car with blacked-out windows that Jackson had arranged to take them to the hotel. They opened the door, and Sam climbed in, eager to get away from the journalists who cascaded forward, shouting to be heard. But Dennis stood quietly, tilting his head back and letting the sun rest on his skin.
"What does it feel like?" journalists shouted. "How do you feel? What does freedom feel like?"
Dennis looked around him. Every camera and microphone vying for his attention, and took a deep breath.
"I don't know yet."
New York. 12. It was a 2-hour drive to Orlando. Sam rested her head on Dennis's shoulder and listened to his voice through his chest, deep and echoey, her head bouncing up and down when he laughed. The radio played songs he'd never heard before, and occasionally a news bulletin about his release would play, and they'd all laugh. Dennis, Sam, Jackson, even the driver, every time. Jackson was talking about filming something later, something for the end of the series to complete the story, and Dennis was complaining that his clothes were itching. The hotel at which they were staying was surrounded by palm trees. There was a fountain outside the foyer that Dennis stuck his hand under, as though he were a child again, water pouring cold over his skin. Every few steps he tripped over himself. "I think it's these shoes," he said. "Haven't walked around in real shoes for a long time." The staff met them outside and led them through to the conference room, which was decorated with a banner that read, "Congratulations." Cakes, chicken wings, tortilla chips, oysters on crushed ice, hummus and celery and carrot sticks were piled onto tables draped in white cloth. People Sam recognized from magazines came towards them, and she watched them hug Dennis and hoped he'd introduce her, but he didn't. Some of the crew arrived behind them, There was more clapping, and Patrick hugged Dennis roughly, patting his back hard. The staff were bringing out more food, hot food, fries and burgers and pizza.
"We didn't know what you like, so we decided to order everything," Jackson said.
"Help yourself." Dennis piled a plate high with fresh fruit and vegetables, telling everyone that they were the things you craved most in prison, that you dreamed of the high vitamin stuff, of fruit that dribbled down your chin, of the crunch of cold carrot sticks. These would make your mouth water when you lay in bed after a day of dry chicken nuggets or hot chili con carne that sank like a stone in your stomach. Sam stood on the sidelines holding a plate of food she didn't eat, watching the double doors for Carrie. They'd been rushed out and into the car so quickly Sam hadn't had the chance to look for her, and now she felt terrible for every moment of Dennis's first day of freedom that Carrie was missing. As people passed, they chirped, "You must be so happy," and Sam smiled, trying to ignore the lurching guilt she felt in Carrie's absence, as if Sam were never meant to be here and had stolen her place. Waiters offered Dennis wine, beer, champagne, but he asked for sparkling water, which made him hiccup as he drank. Jackson handed him several bags, clothes, he said.
"We figured you'd need a new wardrobe."
Dennis disappeared for a while and came back in blue jeans, an open-necked check shirt, with a white t-shirt underneath. The light was dim, but he kept his shaded glasses on. Jackson told him, "We'll need to get you some new glasses. Some Warby Parkers or something."
"Some what?"
"Designer glasses, you know?"
"Oh, sure, sure, okay."
He was rubbing his arms again and someone went to ask the staff to turn the air conditioning down. Some people recognized Sam and talked to her, told her again how happy she must be, and she nodded and watched her husband move around the room. Some of the women there were beautiful, more so than she had thought they would be in real life. She had hoped that actresses were only as beautiful as the makeup and lighting that shrouded them, but up close she could see it was for real.
"Hey!"
A hand pinched her shoulder. It was Carrie, holding Sam's overnight bag.
"Oh my God, Carrie, I'm so sorry, I lost you."
"Don't be stupid. This is crazy, huh? Where is he?"
Carrie put the bag down at Sam's feet. "He's right there."
"Oh shit, look at him, in jeans."
She called to him,
"Dennis!"
He turned, put his glass down on the table, and walked towards her with arms open. Carrie shook her head and covered her face, but kept walking to him, into his arms, letting him hold her at first and then holding him back, her face pressed into his clean white shirt. He lifted her and she laughed, leaned back, her arms around his neck. Sam looked on, sick. It was how it should have been for them, in the courtroom. Dennis was speaking into Carrie's ear, his cheek pressed against hers. A few people sighed, "Aw." Draining her glass, Sam smiled, tight-lipped. They looked, she thought, entirely connected in a way she had wanted to feel. It was almost like a betrayal. Eventually they disconnected. He kissed her on the top of her head, and she smoothed her hair in what Sam assumed, rolling her eyes, was faux bashfulness. They continued to talk as if she wasn't even there. She looked at the overnight bag and started to kick it across the carpet towards the table. When it was concealed behind the white tablecloth, she started to walk over to them, refilling her wine glass as she passed a bottle. It took some concentration to walk in a steady line, but she felt confident in the clarity of her thoughts, the certainty of her emotions. She stood near them and waited for one to notice her and invite her into their circle.
"This is such a trip, Den. I can't... Look at you! Oh my God!"
Carrie was touching him frequently. A pat on his arm, another quick hug, adjusting his collar after it was left askew by another quick hug.
"Thank you."
"Really?"
"No, don't, because I will literally cry."
Sam watched them embrace again and step forward, closer.
"Sam, can you believe this?"
Carrie said, turning to her at last.
"He looks great!"
"I know," Sam said.
"So, what's next for you guys? You gonna take her on a date or what?"
Sam smiled and looked at Dennis, but his face was serious, concerned.
"I don't really have any money. I have $3. They gave me my wallet back, look."
From his pocket, he pulled a navy Velcro wallet, Inside were $3 and a library card.
You don't need money, dude, said Carrie, laughing. These people will take care of that shit.
Have you been up to the room yet?
They shook their heads. It's like Christmas up there, Carrie said. Listen, if you guys want to get started together somewhere else, you can stay with Dylan and me in L.A. for a while. You'll be getting a lot of offers for TV, so it's something to think about, maybe.
Dennis and Sam made noncommittal noises and shared an awkward glance, not knowing what they would be doing in the next hour, let alone the coming months.
Then Sam's mind started racing again, thinking about how, soon, they would be alone together. And she couldn't hear what Carrie was saying or what Dennis replied with while she watched him, stared at the way his fingers curled around a glass, the way his other hand moved to the back of his neck, how he stood and gestured in ways she'd never seen before. Other guests were circling and craning their necks to see if Dennis was available. Soon he was occupied with others, and Sam looked pointedly away from Carrie, spiky with irritation.
Is everything okay?
Carrie asked in a voice that sagged with the knowledge she was not.
Not really, Sam said, vague, a sigh.
Okay, you're acting like a dick with me. What's going on?
Sam immediately felt sick with herself and apologized.
It's just, you're all over each other and it's like he doesn't even want me around.
Doesn't he like me?
What if he doesn't anymore?
Now he can have anyone.
Stop. You're freaking out over nothing. You're like his first girlfriend and you're his wife. That's a pretty big deal. He's only all over me because he doesn't really think about it. It's nothing, you know? It's been like 5 hours. Give it some time.
Sam knew Carrie was right, but even so, she couldn't stop the creeps, the worms that wriggled. She wanted to ask Carrie, why would he like me? Even I don't like me. But she couldn't. So she walked around with him, just to stay near him. Jackson introduced him to various people, Sam following, silent and seething each time no one introduced or acknowledged her. She drank more, held on to Dennis's arm, wanted him to herself, but people just kept approaching. Dennis went to the bathroom and left her standing at the end of the buffet table. She saw Katy Perry and tried to take a photo covertly, but the phone slipped from her hand. She squatted to pick it up and check it was still functional. There were hundreds of notifications and missed calls. She closed one eye to focus, but the words seemed to sway.
What are you doing?
Dennis helped her up, holding her elbow.
I have so many messages.
You're drunk.
I know. I know. It's just this is so weird.
Don't you think this is weird?
Dennis glanced around him.
You're embarrassing yourself.
Perhaps you should go to the room.
Will you come with me? We've hardly even talked.
It would be rude if I left,
but I want to spend time with you.
You should really go to bed, he said, walking away. We'll talk later.
13. Sam opened the door to their room and stopped, amazed, looking at what people had sent for Dennis. Inside were piles of gifts, a stack of white apple boxes with a note that said, "Enjoy the rest of your life, Johnny Depp." There were baskets packed with grooming products and wrapped in sparkling cellophane, and foil streamers, crisp shirts and suits were hanging in zipped covers, and flowers everywhere, with gift cards for designer stores tucked in like love notes. Sam ran her hands over everything, dying to open the sealed envelopes, turning over the box for an iPad in her hands. Instead, she lay on the bed and looked at the room service menu. Inside another note, "Tab's taken care of. Jackson." She had a shower and ordered a Coke and a mineral water, then called back and ordered a pizza. Her mother had been calling. Her Facebook was, for once, alive with notifications from people who had seen her on BuzzFeed.
"Hey! OMG, I can't believe it. Haven't spoken in ages. Let's catch up. Are you coming home soon?"
Not ready to deal with anything, she switched off the phone and buried it in the bottom of her bag. The room spun a little, so she took deep breaths and put a damp cloth over her face. After a while, she sat up and half watched a double bill of Real Housewives of New Jersey on TV, ate her pizza, and let sobriety creep up on her until she felt worried again over how poorly everything was going. Finally, Having kicked the pizza box off the end of the bed, she fell asleep, the damp cloth on the pillow beside her head. It was 2 in the morning when Dennis knocked on the door.
I can't get this thing to work, Dennis said, waving the key card. Why is there pizza on the floor?
Oh, sorry about that. Sam smoothed her hair, but it felt matted, like straw to the touch.
Look! Look at all the gifts!
Dennis got into bed, kicking his shoes underneath it as he did so. The pillow's wet.
I had a headache and...
Are you okay?
I'm tired. You really made a mess in here.
I'm really sorry. Sam got in next to him, put her head on his shoulder, and he put his arm behind her neck. He turned the TV off and the room fell silent. He sighed. They lay together in the quiet. She rested her head on his chest and listened for his heart, but all she heard was the gurgling and growl of his stomach. She tried something, a hand over his torso, hard, rising and falling with his breaths, wanting to feel close to him, to make it real.
I'm sorry, Samantha, I'm tired. He moved away. This has all been a lot to take in. I'd like to just get some sleep.
Sam blushed.
I understand, she said, and got up to brush her teeth.
When she came back, his clothes were folded neatly on the chair at the dressing table, and a bare shoulder poked over the sheets. As she pulled the covers back, he rolled towards her. She saw light hairs on his chest.
Listen, don't take this the wrong way, but do you think we could just... For tonight, maybe could we have our own rooms?
But why? Sam pulled her bathrobe tight and crossed her arms over her stomach.
I haven't slept in a good bed in more than 20 years. Actually, maybe not ever. And this is all really fast, you know? I just... Do you want me to sleep on the sofa?
Sam wanted to turn the lights off so she could cry quietly, so he didn't have to look at her.
Are you sure?
It's fine, honestly.
Well, if you're sure, you'll be comfortable.
And could you turn down the AC while you're up? Here. He threw her one of the heavy down pillows, the one with the damp patch. In the wardrobe, Sam found a fleece comforter and made her bed on the sofa, lying curled, neck bent. She ached to be nearer to Dennis and watched his form in the dark. But she thought of how the bed must feel to his aching bones and knew this was right, even if it hurt like hell.
It's so quiet, he whispered.
Yeah, the silence soothed her, and eventually she too fell into a light sleep. Rustling woke her up at just past 9 in the morning. In the corner, Dennis was searching through a bag of clothes.
Good morning, he said without looking up.
I need something to wear to the gym. Do you think they sell anything here?
I really like to work out.
Call the front desk, they'll know.
Right,
he went to the phone.
You want breakfast?
Do they have eggs Benedict?
I'll order. You should shower. You don't look so hot right now. Hi, can I get...
As he turned his attention to the phone, Sam gathered her wash bag and makeup and ran to the bathroom. Inside, she studied the lock.
Did married people lock the door when they showered?
She decided they did not and left it unlocked. But as she put one leg into the bath, she changed her mind and quietly, slowly, turned the lock until it clunked into place. After her shower, she dressed in the bathroom, shy with the sensation of only the door between her and Dennis. Back in the room, Dennis was piling his gifts into different categories. Electronics went on the dressing table, clothes into drawers and wardrobes, cards on the bedside table. The food arrived with newspapers and coffee. They ate in silence, the knife and fork awkward in Dennis's hands, the shrill scrape of cutlery on plates. When he finished eating, he went back to the cards, opening and reading each one before putting them back in their envelopes on the dressing table.
Don't you want to put those out? Sam asked.
Clutter, he said.
Look, a check for $10,000.
He laughed.
That's so generous. I don't even have a bank account.
He folded the check and put it in his little blue wallet. There was a knock on the door and a concierge dropped off a bag of gym clothes.
I'll see you in an hour, Dennis said and left.
All the time Sam had pictured their first night together. Knotted limbs, lazy, half-asleep sex while he kissed her collarbone and told her how much he loved her. She'd never once considered it would be like this. She pushed the trays of food outside the door and fell back onto the bed, her neck aching from the sofa. The pillow still smelled of him. She buried her face into the linen and inhaled. She could wait, she told herself. She'd have to. 14. Dennis was in a better mood after the gym. He walked into their room with red cheeks and glowing skin, ran a hand over his hair, and a fine spray of sweat flicked into the air. He dropped his soggy shirt into an empty brown bag and disappeared into the shower, the lock clunking as soon as the door shut. Sam picked the t-shirt up and smelled it. It still had a chemical tang of newness. The sweat didn't smell of anything, and she let it fall, disappointed. Before he came back, she positioned herself with a book in what she hoped was a cute, unself-aware pose, her dress tugged up slightly too high. She tried not to look at him when he emerged from the bathroom, a towel tied around his waist. His back was striped with scars, some raised and shining pearly white. "What are those?" she asked, putting her book down and marking the page she wasn't reading. "What are what?" He pulled on underwear beneath his towel, like a girl at the beach. "The marks on your back." Scar felt like a dirty word. He looked over his shoulder as if he was checking what she was talking about. "Those?" He pulled the towel over his shoulders to dry his neck. "Are the scars my dad gave me. He used a belt. He only beat me really bad one time. Most of the others were pretty tame." Sam imagined running her hands over the scars, how Dennis might tremble slightly, and how she'd hold him, and he'd know he was safe. Instead, an awkward silence loomed over them both while he chose from the bags of designer shirts and covered himself up. Eventually, she turned the TV on, just to break the silence. But when she did, he pinched the bridge of his nose and squinted. "It was just like prison," he said, that thing quacking away in the background 24/7 as though people were afraid to hear their own thoughts. Sam switched off the TV and tapped away on her laptop, looking enviously at the unopened MacBook Air on the dresser. Her computer was scuffed and scratched. She was looking up news about Dennis, looking at the pictures of them both outside the court. Him, light dripping over every angle in his face. Her, hair chalky with dry shampoo. And the shadows creating shapes on top of her own shapes that made her look like a beanbag. Dennis, she asked. "What?" "In court yesterday, did you see Lindsay?" "Lindsay?" He looked up at her and frowned. "Yeah, in court." "No, I didn't notice. Why, was she there?" "I thought I saw her, but I wasn't sure."
"Oh. Would it matter if she was?"
"No. No, I just thought I recognized her."
"If she was there, wouldn't she have come up to me? Seems kind of weird that she wouldn't."
Sam agreed, though she was almost certain it had been Lindsay. She let it drop and continued scrolling through the pictures of them both. She felt stupid for asking. For a while she managed to stay in the articles, but the temptation to scroll down to the bottom of the screen proved too great. Soon she was crying.
"What's wrong now?" Dennis asked.
"The things people have been saying." She turned the computer towards him. "Look at this."
"Wow, he's hot. No offense, but he could do better."
"It's not that bad."
"Yes, it is. Look at this one."
WTF. It means what the fuck.
"What the fuck is he doing with her? He could murder my vagina." "Why does murder my vagina mean?"
"It means they want to fuck you and they think I'm too ugly for you."
"And it bothers you?"
"Yes."
"Maybe you shouldn't read this stuff then."
Sam buried her laptop in the bottom of her bag, along with her phone, feeling exposed, judged, just as she had when she read the posts about her on the message boards after they had got married. It was as if the moment she had married Dennis, she had agreed to be scrutinized mercilessly and always compared to the man by her side. It was a deal in which she could never be evaluated favorably, no matter what people thought of Dennis. That burden felt suddenly heavy, and she wondered why she had ever thought this would be easy. When the phone rang, Dennis answered with his full name and told the operator to put the person through, his voice high with the happiness Sam wished she could make him feel. When he'd hung up, he told Sam to get ready. They were going to meet Jackson and the manager.